Melbourne wins another one.
Redemption for Golden State. One of the great playoff runs of all time is complete. The Warriors are NBA champions again.
This is the Sports Zest Podcast on Sin.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Sports Desk Podcast. I'm Tom Parry. I'm here with Caleb Scanlon. Hello, Caleb.
Pleasure to be here, Tom.
Yes, and it's just the two of us today, the Bendigo boys. Ben is not able to join us due to other commitments, but nevertheless, the show must go on.
This is our plan all along, wasn't it? Just to get our own Bendigo sports show, kick Ben off the show.
That's it. There's not a lot of sport happening in Bendigo at the moment. So, we'll have to stick with sport elsewhere.
There is a lot of sport going on at the moment, though, outside of Bendigo, surprisingly, with, as we're recording, the fourth and final day of the test is about to kick off in South Africa.
Yes, so it's the fourth day in Australia, 400 runs ahead.
Awesome news
as we speak,
cricket fans. And then obviously the last game of the JLT series is being played as we speak, really. Gold Coast versus Cats, and then AFL Women's as well. There's soccer going on. It's a great time to be a sports fan in Melbourne.
And let's not forget also the Supercars.
Supercars, of course.
The inaugural round in Adelaide this weekend. Mm-hmm. We'll be discussing that later in the show, as well as cricket, AFL, bit of basketball. And I've got a question of my own at the end, which I'm very, very willing to discuss.
Okay, cool. I look forward to this.
Yeah, absolutely. But we'll jump straight into it with cricket. Now, Michael Clarke is suggesting that Pat Cummins could be the next Australian captain. Now, the last captain to also be a bowler, I believe, from my not-so-extensive research, is Richie Benno, yeah, the all-rounder, way back in the 50s. So, Caleb, do you think that Pat Cummins could be our captain? And what do you make of having a captain who's also a bowler?
Well, I guess the idea behind not having a bowler as a captain stems from, as a captain, you obviously need to set the field and be focused on picking the right field for bowlers and having the ability to take bowlers off if they're not bowling too well. So I think that's maybe why Australia hasn't had a bowler for so long as their captain. But, I mean, I'm a huge fan of Pat Cummins. I think he's one of the most exciting bowlers. We saw Mitch Stark go crazy on South Africa two nights ago. But, after the Ashes, I think Pat Cummins would be perfectly in the frame for the captaincy. The other name that was thrown in the hat was Mitchell Marsh. So if I was to pick between the two, I'd probably lean towards Pat Cummins.
I'd say so as well. So he's probably the one who's more likely to be selected on form and what have you.
Correct, yeah.
An interesting thing, the last two captains we've had are also pretty good bowlers, part-time bowlers.
True, yeah.
We have Steve Smith, who's a leg spinner,
yep,
and Michael Clarke, who's a very good orthodox bowler. But neither of them have been all that willing to embrace their role as a bowler. So they kind of look to the other part-timers to play to the opposition. Do you think that we might see something similar with Pat Cummins, that he's reluctant to let himself bowl?
I don't know, because it started off as almost like a joke that Pat Cummins was going to be an Australian all-rounder, and he kept making these nice little cameos at the end of innings. He'd post 30s, 40s, 50s. So it would be quite the story if he ended up becoming this number six, number seven batter, and we saw him less bowling. But with the amount of talent he's got, I can't see him giving up the bowling anytime soon.
Absolutely. It's also worth remembering that Australia has a litany of great fast bowlers. James Patterson. He's the one who... Pattinson, I should say. He's the one who immediately comes to mind.
Sean Abbott.
Sean Abbott, yes.
There's Billy Stanlake, who's more for the T20s, but he's like 2 metres tall, so he gets a lot of speed going. And Australia's always had great fast bowlers. So you're right, there is room for... It's not like if we lose Pat Cummins that we're like India, for example, who don't have that many great fast bowlers. So
very true.
It's a good point that you make, but I just don't think with the amount of talent and the amount of investment that Cricket Australia has put into Pat Cummins, I don't think they can afford to sacrifice his bowling for his captaincy.
Very true.
And I think like other nations, I think Pakistan had a very good run with having bowlers as captain. And then a while ago, England had Freddie Flintoff as captain. So I think it's more just because Australia hasn't done it. I think there are a few nations that have still had bowlers as captains, and it's been quite successful.
Absolutely. We'll move on from international cricket to the domestic game. Very, very recently, we had an incident in a game between, I believe it was Victoria and New South Wales.
Yeah.
I got that right. Where Sean Abbott was struck in the head by Will Pukowski.
Other way around. So, yeah, oh, Sean Abbott, sorry, bowled a bouncer to Will Pukowski from Victoria and struck him on the helmet.
Yeah, sorry, my apologies, folks. That's all right. I had it the wrong way around in my
all
list
good.
Here.
All good.
So, do you think we need to see more changes to, or more rules change with regard to short pitched bowling, Caleb?
Personally, it's a tough one because I don't think. For context, Sean Abbott was the bowler who in 2014 bowled the fatal delivery that ended up striking Phil Hughes and led to his death, which was tragic for the sport. And obviously this incident, there's no footage of the incident and I wasn't watching the game, but from all reports, Sean Abbott was pretty shook up from the incident. I think there should be changes maybe to the ruling. I think while I love watching cricket that's hostile, and Australians are known for their short pitched bowling, it's very, very dangerous and scary. I don't want to sound like I'm putting nanny state rules on cricket, but it is pretty scary, and I'd be fascinated to see what someone like Sean Abbott has to say with. When he's obviously going to keep bowling short if he's allowed to, but gosh, it must be pretty hard on the young New South Wales quick.
Mm. And I'm just reading this report from the ABC here that says that Aaron Finch was very quick to offer his support to Sean Abbott, which is always good to
see.
Great
to see, yeah.
It's really interesting because Australians, as you mentioned, they are prone to short pitch bowling, but we haven't seen a lot of it in recent times because of the Phil Hughes incident.
Correct, yeah.
And whenever they do use it, and someone's struck by a fast ball, the Australians, they just tend to sort of drop everything and go straight to the opposition player. Have you noticed that?
I have noticed that. I think it's just ever since the Phil Hughes, it's been the natural response from everyone has just been to, one, make sure that they're okay, irrespective of what's happening in the game, whether it's a tense moment, which is probably good in that sense, whether or not that will work to stop more people dying, though. I'm not sure.
Yeah, so it's something to watch out for in the future of the game.
Mm. We'll jump over to some AFL chat.
Yeah, and, why not?
Because it is, as I said earlier, round one of JLT's just finished, and AFL Women's has just wrapped up, I think, the round five with only a few more rounds left. But
I should mention to our listeners, JLT, that's a new pre-season series, or the sponsor is some sort of
insurance, yeah.
Yeah, it's an insurance company. Just a reminder to our listeners, you don't have to choose JLT as your insurer. There are plenty of other insurance providers out there worth looking into. But that threw me when I first heard Ben refer to it as JLT. I was like, what is that?
This is the second season it's been JLT.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Well, one of my favorite things I've heard is that the acronym was just like training because none of the teams took it seriously. I thought that was pretty good. But it's been an interesting week. Unrelated to JLT was some of the big news that James Hird has been offered a job with Fremantle. It's as an analyst, so he'd stay in Melbourne and he would analyse Victorian clubs or other clubs under Ross Lyon. But, you know, obviously James Hird coming back into the AFL is going to cause a bit of controversy after his hugely infamous being the head of the drug scandal that I think started in 2012, was it? 2013?
It would be 2012, I reckon.
It feels like a century ago. That's how long it dragged out.
Yes.
And still seeing the repercussions from it. But do you think it's time that we welcomed James Hird back into the... As fans, do we say it's good that he gets back in, or is there still... Is he... not really welcoming.
It's a lot to unpack here. I come to this as an Essendon supporter, a lifelong Essendon supporter.
Nice caveat.
Yes. I wasn't a big fan of James Hird as a coach. When I heard about his involvement in the supplement scandal, it was one of mixed emotions. On the one hand, they didn't do anything illegal, but on the other, they're administering these players, I should say, with these substances, which we don't know what they do to you.
Yes.
I mean, we remember back to that season, there are a number of soft tissue injuries with the players, and a lot of people suspected that might have been because of the program they had going. But while there are still a lot of people who are bitter with James Hird, particularly the families of the players,
yep.
and how he treated the event. I think that he should be given a second chance. Yeah. I think that Fremantle are making the right decision, just keeping him as an analyst, keeping him away from the game, away from the, you know, the team environment, and, you know, just slowly easing him back into it, I think, is the way to go.
Yeah, I really liked your point about them not knowing what the repercussions were for those things, because it's often a point I think people look over when they're justifying or trying to defend maybe James Hird or the administration at Essendon. I think it's easy to say, oh, they didn't know what was going in their body, or they didn't know that the program was going on. But I think that that's a huge, that's terrible administration in the first place, to have not known what these drugs might be doing to you. And might, while it may be legal, that's probably just as bad, if not worse.
Mm, quite right. They really shouldn't have been using those players as guinea pigs.
Correct, yeah.
But this whole incident, the thing that saddens me more is Mark Thompson, Bomber, premiership winning coach from Geelong, because he was involved with the whole affair. He has just been it's traumatized him, really. He hasn't gone back to any other clubs. He's not coaching anyone. He's just been out and about doing his own thing. Last I heard, he was being harassed by the press.
He had something about there was a tenant in one of the houses he owned was a bikie.
That's correct. So
the headlines became Bomber Thompson involved in drug bust or drugs found in Bomber Thompson's house.
That's correct. One of the properties he owned was being occupied by someone with links to criminal organisations.
That's right, yep.
And, he had to flee the country. Well, not exactly flee the country, but, you know, escape the press.
Yeah.
You know, because of the incident. But back to our original question. Yeah. I think that Fremantle are doing the right thing.
Correct. They've got a very qualified person in to do, if anything, he's quite overqualified to be an analyst. And I think it's a matter of time before a club sees that James Hird is an outstanding footballing brain as well, that they're going to just jump on him. That makes sense.
Yeah, that absolutely does. On to a social issue here to do with the AFL. This has been something that's been going on for quite some time. AFL clubs have been using poker machines as sources of revenue within their training facilities. Is this something we support, Caleb?
Personally, no. I think it's unnecessary. A lot of I think it was Bruce Matheson, who is a Carlton power broker, but he came out because there was a report that was released and that linked the suburbs where AFL clubs have pokie machines, and that there was a positive correlation between that and family violence in there. And then, so in response, Bruce Matheson, who has affiliations with Carlton, said that Hawthorn wouldn't have survived without their poker machines throughout the 90s.
Well, that's interesting, because Hawthorn, if you live in Melbourne, you'll know that Hawthorn is a sort of like upper middle class suburb.
Correct. Yeah. It's certainly not. You wouldn't think it would fall into that graph of family violence. Who knows? But it's not the first suburb you'd think would be high family violence, high poker machine revenue. But
yes, indeed. I first heard about this correlation between AFL clubs and poker machines back in 2012, I think it was.
Okay.
There was a report in The Age which said that the majority of their revenue was coming not from advertising but from the people playing their poker machines. Well, it wasn't a majority, but it was a significant amount of money. And I just thought to myself, well, what's this saying to your club members? Do you want them to just, spend their money on something where they know they're going to lose?
Yeah. I think the excuse that they're reliant on the revenue coming from those, I think, is garbage. I think the AFL have so many different ways of creating revenue through merchandise, through ticket sales, through memberships.
Telecast.
The huge deals with that. I don't think that you can say it's justified at all in terms of, one, the family violence, and two, the financial strains it would put on these people that are not very, very poor off.
I do agree with you. Let's move on again to the AFLX. It is suggested that it be moved to November, so after the premiership season and the finals, and be played in Hong Kong, which is in another continent, in Asia, no less.
What was your thoughts on AFLX? Were you a fan? Were you in the boat of, like, it wasn't too bad, but...
Well, when Ben and I last discussed it Monday week ago, we were all for it. We thought that maybe there's things that could be done to improve it. And obviously it's not as good as AFL itself.
Yeah.
But as a means of inviting people into the game, letting kids play, introducing it to overseas markets, it's absolutely perfect.
I agree. And I think like anything new, it's going to have like some teething problems. And I think one of the things a lot of people complained about was there wasn't enough contests. So maybe even bumping it up to 9 on a field might increase the like tackling sort of side of things. Mm. But I feel like all today I've just aggressively agreed with you, but
that's not a bad thing.
Yeah, that's good. Maybe next time we'll just plan some arguments to.
Yes.
I'll play the devil's advocate, but I agree. I think if we're looking in, I don't think the AFL can get complacent with where they stand in Australia or as being the premier sport in Australia. I think they need to keep going and try and break into that international market, and. I really like this idea of moving it to November because my biggest gripe with it was that it was detracting away from the AFL Women's, which I think the AFL needs to let it just grow and give it that space in February for the game to pick up. Because unfortunately, we're seeing it now, the AFL Women's is being pushed further and further back in the paper, away from the back page. As the season progresses.
Yeah, that's very sad. There's also another argument to be made about AFLX in November. Some people believe that having it played from March or even February right through to November will give people footy fatigue, if you will. Is this something you agree with, Caleb?
I kind of get it because coming from the international series, I feel like every year when that comes around, I'm a little bit disinterested because it's, you know, a month after the grand final, and now I'm not dying to watch footy yet. I'm still a bit like, okay, that was a long season, particularly as a Doggies fan last year. It was a very long season. Mm. So it is an issue, I think, playing it in November. There might be fatigued footy fans that just want to watch the cricket. But again, I think it's important because they need to give AFL Women's a bit more space.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I actually don't think there will be a lot of fatigue because given that they'll be playing the game overseas eventually, it won't be a sport for us.
Yeah.
It'll be a sport for them to, you know, be introduced to the game.
Yeah. The fans effectively aren't going to have watched footy for their whole time. I get what you mean.
Quite right. And add on to that, my dad, he too enjoys his footy, but he's fatigued by July. So,
right.
You know, for someone like him, he'd be, you know, not into it at all.
It's an interesting one. They were talking about they're trying to make it like the Big Bash in getting old players back and, you know, getting a few retired players that could still do it. Are there any players that spring to your mind that would, any Bombers players you'd like to see don the jersey and play?
Ooh, that's a good one. Andrew McDonald Tipanui.
Oh, yeah.
I hope I'm pronouncing his last name correctly. He's someone I've admired for like the last couple of years.
What about retired players? So ex-AFL players. So if like we're talking about cricket metaphors, like the Brett Lee or like Brad Hogg come back.
I suppose Bob Murphy.
He would be awesome.
Yeah, I'd love to have him back. He's been a great ambassador for the game. Mm. And he was still playing really well when we saw him last season. Brent Harvey.
I was going to say Brent Harvey. I think it's very suited to him. He's small, he's quick, and he just runs so fast. So,
absolutely. So, Gillon McLaughlin, if you are listening, please take our ideas on board.
We know that AFL House listen to our podcast.
Every week.
Jot that note down. Hey, and if Brent Harvey's listening, there's some ideas for you.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, let's move away from Australian sports onto basketball. And the NBA in particular. Mm. Now, we on the podcast have talked in both of our episodes this year about both LeBron James and Ben Simmons. And this is the first time there's a question to bring the two together.
So good.
Yeah, because
very efficient.
Yes, indeed. Because LeBron James is saying that Ben Simmons, the Australian, could well be the, quote, next in line to be king of basketball. Is this something you agree with, Caleb?
I agree with him becoming the king. Mm. Whether I'm a bit unsure whether it's heaping unnecessary pressure on Simmons. I think he's had a fantastic rookie year. But surely, of all people, LeBron would know what drawing comparisons does to you, because I think all of his career, it's always been LeBron, is he as good as Jordan?
Mm.
And invariably, he's just caused that for Ben Simmons. I think it's already started and Ben Simmons has played one season. How many seasons more will he get the draw comparisons to LeBron James?
That's quite true, yes. But to think that we've had so many Australian players come through, like Andrew Gaze, mm-hmm. Andrew Bogut, Matty Dellavedova,
who's Mills,
yeah, from Maryborough, yeah. Not far from us.
we love regional Victorians.
Yes, we do indeed. And no American has said a thing about them. So for LeBron to come out and say, hey, this guy's the real
enormous,
deal.
Isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, it is enormous. Whether he's putting too much pressure on him, I think Ben's already used to that pressure.
Yeah.
Like, he was like one of the favourites coming in. He was interviewed by Jimmy Fallon. Yes, yep. I've got that right. Jimmy Fallon prior to joining the NBA.
Wow.
So, no, he's totally got a lid on it, I think. So he'll just take, you know, quotes like this in his stride. Back home now to the NBL, the Australian Basketball League, mm-hmm. that is. And Melbourne United have progressed to the grand final against...
I think they have the chance to progress. Right. They play tomorrow night.
They have
night.
The chance.
So there second of three games. Yes. They won the first one.
There we are. And Adelaide also won over the Wildcats. Now, I tipped the Wildcats to win when I was on radio 2 weeks ago.
Well, they've got such a great history. Yeah. But in saying that, Adelaide won at home. So the real challenge will be Adelaide to beat Perth over at the Fortress over in Perth.
Absolutely.
But similarly with Melbourne having to go over the Tasman and play against New Zealand in New Zealand. That'll be the true test.
Quite right. Now, back to your original question, Caleb. Mm. Melbourne United have the chance to progress to the grand final tomorrow if they beat the New Zealand Breakers. Can they do it? Yes, they can.
They finished on top of the ladder.
Yes,
so
they were on top.
Yeah, and even if they don't win it, you'd back them to win in Game 3 at Hisense Arena. Mm. Let's move to the motorsports. We talked about it at the start of the show that we were going to get to it. We've finally gotten around to it. Mm. They are back this weekend, or they were back this weekend in Adelaide. Australia are no longer selling the Falcon or the Altima, which are the two premier cars from Ford and Holden.
Nissan. So right. Holden is still selling the Commodore.
Right, sorry, yeah,
they're not building it here, though.
Yeah, that's right. But you've posted the question here, that is the format outdated? Should we even care anymore? I should have warned before this, I am not a motorsport fan. I enjoy watching it, but I know very little about it. So yes, I think I'd probably get your perspective on this one.
Well, my interest in the sport has waned in recent years because, as you said, they're no longer building the Falcon here.
Yep.
The Falcons they got on the field, they're now 2 years old.
Really?
So their chassis is like desperately outdated.
So they're not producing them worldwide at all?
So no, they don't produce the Falcon at all.
Wow.
That was specifically for the Australian market. As for the Nissan Altima, it was sold here by Nissan's Australian arm, and that just didn't gain enough sales, so they just removed it from the lineup.
Right.
So, yes, we've got two cars which aren't being sold in this country, which are being raced, and we've also got the new Holden Commodore, which is an import and isn't even sold as a V8.
Yeah, so I see where you're coming.
So we've got to ask ourselves, first of all, is the format outdated? I believe it is. I believe we won't be seeing the supercars around for much longer. We've seen a lot of touring car championships around the world. They struggle to survive because they don't have the support of manufacturers.
Yes.
And I think Holden and Nissan are providing in-principle support for now, and they do have their own teams. Well, Holden still has its own team running, which is good. But really, going on to the second question, I don't think anybody does care anymore.
Yeah.
I mean, the only times that the touring car races gain any publicity is when Bathurst is on.
Yeah,
like,
great.
Because, you know, it's a great race, great circuit.
It's the most famous race, really, in supercars, at least, V8 supercars.
Well, actually, all around the world, actually.
Yeah, right.
Because, I know in Britain it's, gained a bit of notoriety. They
really?
They held a couple of rounds of the World Touring Car Championship at Bathurst.
Awesome.
Way back in the 80s, I think it
yep.
was. But, yes, as... It just makes me sad, listeners.
It is, isn't it?
It
because
just makes me sad.
It has such a proud history in Australia.
And we've got so many talented drivers in the field, like Shane Van Gisbergen, who was on pole, actually, for Adelaide today.
Yeah.
Craig Lowndes is still racing. Mark Winterbottom, who's probably my favourite Ford driver.
Uh-huh.
But if they're not producing the cars in the country, well, why should people take an interest? That's basically my takeaway, Caleb.
Yep. as I said earlier, when I probably gave it away by calling it a Holden Altima, but not a huge car or V8 fan, but I, from what you've said, it makes 100, like it totally makes sense, and I can understand why fans may not be caring as much anymore. I don't know, do you think there's any short-term or long-term solution to it? Do they need to start, obviously this is a huge, like a way bigger issue, but do they need the manufacturers in Australia to keep the sport going?
Well, not necessarily, because we see in Britain with their touring car championship, they've got the likes of Honda and BMW and so on and so forth competing in the events. And the only... I don't know. Does anyone? No, I don't think any of the British manufacturers are actually in the championship.
Yeah,
I mean, there are companies that do make cars in Britain. Well, Honda does. Toyota does. They make the Corolla there, or at least some of their models.
Yeah.
But no, the majority of the manufacturers are overseas ones.
So it's been quite successful over in Britain.
So it's been downward trend as it is in Australia here, but they've managed to keep it going. So I think, if it is to survive, they'd need to broaden it.
Mm-hmm.
So they couldn't just have Ford and Holden and Nissan. They'd need to be introducing all sorts of manufacturers. Another thing they've tried to do to increase the event's, popularity, is the Super Utes.
Mm-hmm.
So, and rather than have the basic Commodore or Falcon chassis, what they've done is they've taken the dual cab Utes.
Yep.
So, you know, like the Ford Ranger and the Toyota Hilux and Mitsubishi Triton, and they've turned them into, like, racing machines, like racing cars, and they've got them go around the circuit, which is, it's quite perplexing to see the first time you watch it, but you know, after a while you get into it.
Cool. So it sounds like they're trying to tap into the Deniliquin Ute Muster crowd or audience.
Yeah,
maybe that's the market.
Yeah, maybe it is. But that was a very long-winded discussion. But in short, we doubt it's going to survive, but you know, I personally hope it does.
Mm.
Another motorsport event which is slightly more popular than supercars is the Formula One.
Yep.
The season hasn't begun yet, but they have already started putting the barricades around Albert Park.
Very exciting. I've seen this.
Yes.
And it's awesome. It gets you excited. How many, is it 2 weekends away?
I believe it is, 2 weekends
away.
Yes. Now, the question I've posed is, regarding Daniel Ricciardo, he's set the fastest lap times at testing in Barcelona. Is he in with a chance this year, Caleb?
Of course he is. We have to get behind him. We have to... be optimists. Mm. I think so. I feel like last year he had a lot of troubles with his with Red Bull, and not like one of my favorite videos was his the best overtake all year, and he overtook like 3 cars at once. So I hold hope for Dan Ricciardo. I hope that this is the year for him, and I hope that he has some success in Melbourne particularly.
Well, he is a very skilled and talented driver. But the problem, he's got the Mark Webber syndrome here. He doesn't have the car to back him up.
Yeah.
So we saw that when Mark Webber had been in the sport for nearly a decade, and he didn't win until he was with Red Bull.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a huge, I mean, you know, most Formula One drivers, they barely last like a couple of seasons. So for him to last that long and finally win was a huge achievement. And then he got short shifted by his own teammate, Sebastian Vettel, which was, a dark time for Australian motorsport fans. But I know, back to Daniel Ricciardo. I discussed this with a mate of mine who's really in the Formula One. He stays up all night to watch it. And he said that the same thing happened last year with testing, that Daniel Ricciardo got the fastest lap times, but because his car couldn't compete with Mercedes or Ferrari on the day when it counted, he wasn't able to, you know, bring up those points or podium finishes. So, as with any year, Daniel Ricciardo is in with a chance, but I think that all depends on the competition, really.
It must be quite frustrating for Ricciardo just to know that he is, well, I may be biased, but like the best driver out of all of them there, yet he constantly gets let down by his car.
I think he's still got the fastest time on the Top Gear lap leaderboard.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, that's awesome.
I believe that is true.
Well, he shouldn't even worry about, you know, getting these championships when he's got the fastest lap time on Top Gear. Surely that's the ultimate
The pinnacle of motorsport.
That's the word I'm looking for. Pinnacle of motorsport.
Yes, indeed. Now, we're almost out of time, but there is one final question I'd like to put to you, Caleb.
Yep.
Tomorrow is the 90th Academy Awards. I should explain, we're recording this on Sunday the 4th, so it'll be airing on TV live March 5th. There's a couple of good movies in there, but I wanted to talk about sports movies in particular, Caleb. What is your favourite sports movie?
I think my favourite sports movie...
He's thinking long and hard about this one, listeners.
Maybe it's a toss-up between either Coach Carter or Invictus, a movie about the South African rugby team, Nelson Mandela.
Coach Carter's basketball movie.
American movie, stars Samuel L. Jackson, I think.
More than likely.
Yes, but a fantastic film. What about yourself?
Yes, so my absolute favourite is Rush, which is a Formula One movie. Stars Chris Hemsworth as James Hunt, the British playboy, and he's up against Niki Lauda, who is an Austrian driver, and he's played by German actor Daniel Brühl.
Okay.
And Daniel Brühl's a brilliant actor.
I can't believe I haven't heard of it. Rush.
It was released, had a small limited release in September of 2013, and it's just an absolutely fascinating movie. Like, we think of Lauda and Hunt as these polar opposites, but in the movie we see them as truly complex characters, they even have similarities. So amazing. It's fascinating to watch.
I know what I'll be watching tonight then.
Absolutely. Another two I'd like to recommend, I, Tonya, which is nominated
for a fantastic film.
Yes, yep, nominated for a couple of Oscars at tomorrow's ceremony. Best Actress for Margot Robbie and Best Editing, I believe.
It was without going into too much, I think it was definitely should win the Best Editing. I don't know what it's coming up against, but I thought it was beautiful, like an incredibly shot film.
Yeah, absolutely. And it humanizes Tonya Harding as well. The second one, it didn't get any nominations, but good film nonetheless, Battle of the Sexes.
I haven't watched this yet.
Yeah, it's a tennis movie. It's got Emma Stone as Billie Jean King going up against Steve Carell's character Bobby Riggs in what's depicted as man v woman to see who's the most dominant sex on the tennis court. You probably already know the result by now. You can just look it up on Wikipedia. But it's a really fascinating film. And again, it humanizes the characters. I mean, Bobby's depicted as this self-described male chauvinist pig, and you know, it treats him really sympathetically, which I found quite touching. But But my ultimate sports movie, Rush, and for you, Caleb, Coach Carter, and Invictus.
Yeah, I'll give it to Coach Carter, I think. Okay. Coach Carter.
But Invictus is also a good movie.
Fantastic movie, absolutely.
Yeah.
Reminds me of why everyone loves sport and why sport's so great and why I hope do podcasts about sport.
Yeah, absolutely. Same here for me. That is all we have time for on today's podcast. Thank you very much, Caleb, for coming in.
No, thank you. It's been a pleasure.
And Ben, we are so sorry you couldn't be here. We'd love to hear your thoughts on it. So if you want to expand upon them, then you know you've got all week to do it. Right here. And that is the Sports Desk podcast, where we talk about nothing but sport, the games which unite the people of the world.